Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, brewers of Goose IPA, Four Star Pils, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Bourbon County Brand Stout. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink, we just want to be the best beer you drink.
Ain't no way for me to love you if you won't let me.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and today we're remembering the life and music of Aretha Franklin. The Queen of Soul, Jim, dead at the age of 76, a huge loss for the world. One of the greatest singers of all time. It needs, you know, nobody needs to be told that. I mean,
no.
The numbers speak for themselves. 77 top 100 songs, 21 number one R&B hits, 18 Grammy Awards, first female artist inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. But it's more than just a numbers game with Aretha, the hits. The great gospel critic Anthony Heilbutt said that her role as a pivotal figure in the way women and African Americans were perceived in popular culture was so important. You know, he said that you could trace the history of Black America into pre and post Aretha.
I think that's absolutely. You know, I think any critic forced to say the most significant voices in popular music in the last century. I think we could debate for the men. Maybe Tony Bennett, I'd go with Frank Sinatra, but there's no debate about Aretha is the voice.
Yes, I mean, the influence is huge. I mean, every singer post-Aretha has been influenced by her. There's no singer that you could name, male and female, really, that hasn't been touched by that voice and been informed by it. Whitney Houston, Adele, Jennifer Hudson, Fantasia. I mean, these singers have all been hugely influenced by her. You know, it's interesting. She grew up in the household of one of the most famous preachers in 20th century America, the Reverend
Franklin.
Reverend C.L. Franklin. Her mentors as a child were great gospel singers: Mahalia Jackson, Clara Ward, Albertina Walker. These were regular visitors to the Franklin household because of the Reverend's stature in the business.
Along with the Reverend Martin Luther King and guys like Sam Cooke.
Incredible. She was born in Memphis, Tennessee. The family moved to Buffalo, New York, and then settled in Detroit, which was basically where she spent her childhood.
Yeah, age five.
You mentioned New Bethel Baptist Church. That was her father's church. She became a performer there when she was in her teens, and a star performer. They would sit Aretha down at the piano, and she would belt. And by the time she was 14, she was already recording some timeless music. You know, she was performing these classic gospel hymns. There's a Fountain Filled with Blood.
Mm-hmm.
There's a recording of Aretha performing that song at age 14. And it doesn't sound like any 14-year-old I've ever heard.
No.
She was on the gospel circuit with her father. This is how it would work. The Reverend C.L. Franklin was the headliner. And along on these gospel caravans that were touring through the South, you know, performers like his daughter, Aretha Franklin, would be the warm-up acts.
Yep.
And they would cut their teeth performing for these congregations all across the South as a teenager. So that's where she learned how to sing in front of an audience, how to move a crowd. You know, that spirit feel that they talk about in gospel music.
I think we got to put C.L. Franklin in some perspective, Greg. He was, today we have these televangelist mega churches mm-hmm. where they're superstars, the preachers. And he was like that for his era. He also impregnated a 12-year-old parishioner and was a philanderer. Aretha's mom left him. And I think she had an extraordinarily difficult upbringing despite this fame and fortune. She became a mother at age 12. She dropped out of high school as a sophomore. She was married twice. Neither lasted very long. Both ended in divorce. There was domestic abuse in the first marriage. She suffered from alcoholism. Jerry Wexler, we'll talk about his role in the Atlantic years, said, "I always thought of Aretha as Our Lady of Mysterious Sorrows,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Luminous eyes covering inexplicable pain. Her depressions could be deep as the dark sea." When she turned to music, learning to play piano by ear, right? Yeah. You know, it was as catharsis, it was as transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
"My life has problems. All of ours do. This music is my escape.
Yeah, there was a lot of pain poured into that music, without a doubt. You can feel the anguish in her voice, the sadness, but also the ecstasy and the celebratory feel of being able to have this outlet and this gift. And she knew she had a gift. You know, her grandmother was basically raising her at home because her father was on the road. Much when Aretha wasn't on the road with him. By the time she was 18, she says, "I'm out of here. I want to leave." She went to New York with her father's blessing, with the idea of forging a career in music. And at that point, I think, Jim, she was pretty open. Despite the gospel upbringing, she was conversant with the popular music of the day. She loved it just as much as she loved the gospel stuff.
Well,
and there was a sense that, I can do anything I want with this voice.
I can do anything and I shouldn't be limited. And it has been said by some of her biographers that Sam Cooke instilled that in her.
Mm.
Well, there's debate about the Columbia years. Her first major label, she signed to Columbia Records by the great John Hammond, who would go on to sign Dylan. A lot of critics write off the Columbia years, and they say she is being put into a pop mold instead of finding her true self, her true voice, as she did later at Atlantic. I reject that.
Mm.
I think her interests in music, her love of music, were always wide-ranging. She loved the Tin Pan Alley pop.
Yeah.
She loved the gospel. She loved everything. And I think that to just say she didn't have any soul, becomes known as Lady Soul. You mentioned she's crowned the Queen of Soul here at the Regal Theater in Chicago in 1967,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's there from the beginning.
Is that why you got in touch with me? I guess you must be running out of food.
A lot of people just say Columbia was always steering her what to do. I don't think Aretha was ever easily steered. She loved Dinah Washington. In 1964, she puts out an album, Unforgettable, a tribute to Dinah Washington. No record company is telling her to do that. She said, "I first heard Dinah was when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it." And a recurring thing we will see throughout her career, whoever she sings, whether it's opera or Dinah Washington or Stealing R.E.S.P.E.C.T., a song she sings becomes hers.
Soulville, and show me the way to get to Soulville, baby. Show me the way to go,
the way to go home.
Show me the way to get to Soulville, baby.
That's where I belong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Show me the way to get to
Soulville, baby.
Show me the way to go,
the way to go home.
Show me the way to get to
Soulville, baby.
That's where I belong. twist over the yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's Soulville, as sung by Aretha Franklin from her tribute album to Dinah Washington in 1964. You know, again, Jim, we're sort of diving deep into this period of her life because I think it's the one that gets the shortest shrift. Nobody really pays attention to Aretha in the Columbia years, even though she was a very high-profile artist at the time. A lot of people were saying, well, she was just recording the Barbra Streisand leftovers, you know, because Streisand was the big singer on Columbia at the time. Aretha story is that nobody really knew what to do with Aretha at Columbia, and it wasn't until she got to Atlantic in 1967 that she really discovered what she wanted to do.
I think it's Atlantic that tells that story.
Yeah. She knew what she wanted to do. And this sort of wide-ranging taste in the kinds of music that she liked and loved to sing, and that not only that she liked to sing, but that she had a real feel for, was pretty wide, and it illustrated her depth as a singer. You know, there's another track from that Dinah Washington tribute album that I think illustrates her feel for the blues. Nobody Knows the Way I Feel This Morning. Mm. And a lot of people say, well, the Columbia sessions were kind of gloppy orchestral kind of things. And listen to this track and tell me there's anything gloppy or orchestral about it.
Yeah.
You've got Ernie Hayes swinging on his gospel organ. You got Gary Chester counterpunching on those drums. And at about the 3-minute mark in this song, Aretha just feels it and just takes off. And it'll send a chill up your spine. Aretha singing the blues is an amazing thing. And the one thing she doesn't lose throughout this period is that she bends every song to that gospel feeling. Mm-hmm. She never loses her touch with the church or the gospel. She always brings it to whatever she's singing. Nobody Knows the Way I Feel This Morning, as interpreted by Aretha Franklin.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows the way I feel this morning. I said nobody knows.
Lady Soul, Aretha Franklin, Nobody Knows the Way I Feel This Morning. I feel that way often, Greg, in the morning. One of the great voices in pop music history has left us, Aretha Franklin, dead at the age of 76. When we come back on Sound Opinions, we are going to go to the Atlantic years and the rest of Aretha Franklin's extraordinary career. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.